Oh, it offends me to the soul to hear a robustious, periwig-painted fellow tear a passion to tatters, to very rags, to split the ears of the groundlings, who for the most part are capable of nothing but inexplicable dumb shows and noise.
Well, Hammy, you better hang on to your bear bodkin, because you're going to hate this. It's John Malden, your host of the Inexplicable Dumb Show, starting now.
Hi, and welcome to episode 660 of the Inexplicable Dumb Show. I'm John Malden, and this week I'm joined on Zoomland by Aaron Cronican, William Ketter, and they are director and actor, respectively, of Seeing Place Theater. And we're going to talk about their latest production of Dog Act over Zoom. They've done everything over Zoom, COVID safe, the whole nine yards, so it's pretty exciting approach to a very modern problem. So we're going to get into that conversation just after, you guessed it, these brief messages.
If you love the Inexplicable Dumb Show as much as I do, don't be shy about it. Go ahead and wear your feelings on your sleeve, or at least your chest. Head on over to our Cafe Press store and wear your support for the IDS proudly. www.cafepress.com/dumbshow.
Hey, do you want to be part of the Dumb Show? Do you like what you hear? You got a thought about it? You want to express that thought? Then please do so by calling the voicemail line at 615-866-1282 or put your thoughts in an email, podcast@inexplicabledumbshow.com, or follow the show on Twitter @inexplicableDS, @ inexplicable D S. Find out the latest comings and goings and whatnot for the show via our Twitter feed. So, let's get on with the interview.
Hi, I am someone you will probably never meet. Yet I ask you to take time
to think about people you don't know but need your help. Children, some of them, and they don't all play, in the gutter, of course.
Well, maybe if it's called for.
These men, women, and yes, even the children are professional actors. They want and need your time, money, and support.
For just pennies a second, you can enjoy the fruits of their labor. Make sure they know you heard about them on the Inexplicable Dumb Show. They may look at you funny, but that doesn't matter. It's for the children.
It's time once again for some deep fried theater.
IDSers, welcome to an interview on Zoomland. This time we're on Zoom. I've got Aaron Cronican and William Ketter, and they're from the Seeing Place Theater's production of Dog Act. Aaron, you direct as well as play a role, and William, you play a role, correct? Is that how we've got going on?
Yes, absolutely.
That's it.
Awesome. I got that right. So, as I said before we started recording, Katie has sent a metric ton of information, which I'm grateful for. But I could go down your bios and I could say, you did this and you did that and you did this, and you'd go, yes. And then we wouldn't have much of an interview. Right. So I just want to first start off with, a little, two or three things about yourselves and then how you ended up with the Seeing Place Theater, and then how we, then we can transfer into talking about the specific show. So, again, surely, two or three things, not going to hold you to it for infinity, but whatever, two or three things that you would want somebody who you've never met to know about you. And you're
sure.
Off. Aaron, I'm going to make you go first.
Oh, sure. No problem. Well, I'm one of the co-founders of the Seeing Place Theater. I am an actor here in New York City. We founded the Seeing Place in 2009 because we were looking for a place that would be actor-focused. There are a lot of playwright-focused and director-focused ensembles, but not as many that are actor-focused. And we specialize in doing plays that are by master playwrights, so people who have done quite a few plays and have had them published. And then we put our own interpretive spin on them based on the social justice climate, whatever is going on in society today.
Excellent. And William?
Yeah. My story with the Seeing Place is much shorter than Aaron's. I've only been around for the last 2 years or so. But I joined the company pretty much right out of school. I had spent 4 years in a BFA program with the same actors and growing and developing a bond with them. And it was a massive highlight of the college experience for me. to work in an ensemble like I did there. And when I got out of the world, it was so confusing and so hectic and all these things and lacking a home. And, when I found the Seeing Place, it took me a while to get used to what we were doing. But now that I have, it is that home for me, because of the reasons that Aaron has already iterated there.
So
additionally, I'm an autistic person, and the themes of social justice and the sort of working in our own mold are things that are very important to me.
Excellent. Excellent. So where was college for you?
I went to school at Hofstra on Long Island.
So yeah, yeah.
Not too far from here in Brooklyn.
Not too far. Yeah. Cool. So what leads us then into the social change aspect, and how do you want this production to fit your mold of your world, not your worldview, but your purpose view, maybe? Does that make sense?
Yeah. Well, one of the great things about the show is that it is a very stylized theatrical piece. And so it lends itself to live in any time or place. And there are a lot of things that you could attribute to the here and now, at whatever time you produce it. But it happens to be a post-apocalyptic comedy. So as we're living through the pandemic right now, it seemed like a particularly good time to do this kind of play. All of the characters in the play are dealing with housing insecurity and food insecurity. So we're partnering with an organization called St. Clements that has a food pantry. And we're donating all of the proceeds from this production to the food pantry. And we're also doing a talk back discussion to talk about the action steps. You know, what are we doing in our community now that we've seen the play? How do we take that into society? And that's how we make sure that the social justice aspect is attended to.
Oh, cool. So let's take the COVID pandemic world out for just a second as far as how we approach the script, because that's obviously got its own set of qualifiers. What about this script, if in an ideal world and we could have a full house and we're doing theater the way we used to do it for eons, what about the script is a challenge for you, or a surprise for you that you've discovered throughout the rehearsal process? Let's start there.
Sure. I can take that one. One thing that really struck us about the script, and we talk about it a lot in our rehearsals, and it's really sort of anchored in our imaginations, is that the use of language in this play is really, really extraordinary. The playwright Liz Duffy Adams has done a really wonderful job with the language, and it strikes us as it's Shakespearean. It's elevated language, right? Which us, as you know, we're all longtime actors, very used to the classics. And so we found our home right away in this text. You know, it was like we picked it up immediately. And it's so funny to see that language contrasted with, like, one of the first couple lines in the show is, "Thou fucklobe." all of us are so tickled by that sort of usage. In addition to what Aaron's talking about food insecurity and housing insecurity, that's how we can talk about this from a social justice perspective, but from a theatrical one, all these characters have stuff they're dealing with, right? Which as an actor is where the challenge and where the real meat of a performance can come from. So all these characters really have, even the supporting characters, have these wonderful arcs where they're really dealing with their problems in every moment. And that's exciting. That's where the play starts to happen. Right.
Right. So is the language, sort of, I get what you're saying, but it's kind of a mash between a Shakespearean verse I read one of the reviews, I guess it said it kind of had some made up parts to it. Does it kind of have, so how do you come up with, or how did you address, I guess, this idea of a language that doesn't exist but has to for these characters? Does that make sense?
Yeah, my character Zeta adds extra syllables to things that don't belong there, or punches things that are a little archaic. So she might say, instead of saying information, she might say information. and drop a letter here, add a syllable there. And what we discovered was this is really how the people who have survived this apocalypse have found a natural way to speak amongst their own tribe, amongst the people that they travel with. And so as these different tribes get together, and we see three tribes meet in this particular play, each of them has their own language. It's really more like different dialects of the same language. And speaking of the Shakespeare, one of the reviews we just got suggested that this was Shakespeare as directed by Quentin Tarantino.
Excellent.
And I thought that was apt.
Fun. Yeah, that's kind of fun. So what besides language... well, I guess the language then allows these characters, these actors, to embrace kind of the intricacies of their own personas, right? So how as actors and performers, how have you found that freeing to be playing with language that is, because Shakespeare tends to be very, you know, metered in its way, but it sounds to me like this version of it is a little freer. So instead of playing 4/4, you're doing a little jazz swing. Does that make sense?
Absolutely. Yeah. So I play a character who has decided to be a dog. Is a person, has gone through some trauma, has decided they would rather not deal with that trauma, and is now a dog instead. And in that way, like you say, in a Shakespearean verse, you can vary on that rhythm a little bit, but you really have to spend a lot of effort getting the communication.
Mm-hmm.
Here, the communication's a little easier, so you don't have to spend quite so much effort on it, and that's allowing me to really do things like add a dog sound partway through. So, oh, there's an O vowel here. Well, I'll howl on that word. I'll make this a shake sound. all these sorts of like really exaggerated, really unrealistic character elements, but allowing us to play with them and to use the language as it's written in the script. To do that with, rather than force these things onto a script.
Right. So how do we then take this script, and which I assume it was written for a traditional sort of viewing
performance. Yes.
And now we're shifting into the crazy world that thankfully we have Zoom to do things like this, but in how are you layering in and combating and making it work in Zoom world?
Well, one of the things that we do is first we deliver all of our lines directly to the camera so that we're looking at our scene partners directly, but we're also looking at the audience directly. So they're getting an incredibly intimate experience, even though we are miles and miles away from one another. We also pay a good amount of attention to the aesthetic of the medium. So we have music that plays throughout, that it creates an kind of an atmosphere of where we're at. We have backgrounds that are used so that you have a visual representation of where we are. And those backgrounds change throughout the show depending on the setting of the play. And we're in full costume as well. So it should feel like they're seeing a true production. Just we have that immediacy of being looked at directly.
Right.
But that said, the audience still has that privacy of being in their own home.
Cool. So I think you mentioned earlier that the backgrounds. So who let's give them their credit. Who has done your backgrounds and
yes,
like
a wonderful artist named Laura Bonacci, who I originally met because she came to one of our shows and then let us know that she was an artist, and I've been following her work on Instagram ever since. And so I commissioned her to create these backgrounds, and they're just gorgeous, and they're meant to be meta theatrical, so not entirely representative, but more a little more carefree and fun.
Oh. So Wim, how is it for you as an actor to work in essentially this whatever box we have going on here? And how is that to address, how is that to work that way for you?
I find it with this character specifically, it's been rather frustrating because, you know, normally I'd be doing all sorts of things like we recently did a production of Animal Farm, And I played a dozen barnyard animals over the course of that show. And it was one of some of the most fun I've ever had on stage to bring these animals to life physically with my body. And I was like, oh, cool. I'm playing a dog. I can use those. No. Not really, because I'm in a chair. Right. I'm right here. I have my hands. I can do stuff with my hands, and that's it. So, like, I keep thinking, like, oh, it'd be really fun to do this speech, like I was bouncing on hind legs. Can't do that. Mm-hmm. Can't do that here. But in a way, it sort of focuses. You know, maybe those ideas aren't as useful as I would imagine them to be on stage. Right. It is sort of a. Okay, but yeah, you got to do it in the frame.
Right.
Okay,
right.
That's a great idea, but can you do it?
We only have this and this. Yes. Yeah.
So in that way, it keeps the ideas cycling. It keeps things. You have to keep trying new things, and you have to keep throwing away the stuff that doesn't work and doesn't help.
How did you siphon your inner dog? What brought in your? What was your source material from to help develop your character?
I had to, at first I was getting the note, you're not enough of a dog, right? And I was like sort of doing all this human stuff, like I was talking before about repressed trauma, and I was like focusing on that because it's a human being, right?
Right, right.
I had to eventually picture the dog that I was. I was like, okay, well, I'm a dog. That doesn't help. What dog am I?
Right.
And I settled on a golden retriever puppy. And once I had that image in mind, the sort of responses that puppy might have started to come through and started to, the dog started to take on a personality and those things, the immediacy of that really helped inform my moment to moment.
Cool. So how we go about then, Aaron, I guess everything was over Zoom, right? We're rehearsing over Zoom. We're troubleshooting over Zoom. So what was that process like, and how long did it take? And you said people were spread out all over, just all over the city, or are you going through the country, or how does that work?
We're all over the city right now. All of our members of the Seeing Place are based in New York City, although some are quarantining elsewhere in the country right now. Mm-hmm. But yeah, everything that we've done over Zoom, probably the most challenging and also one of the more gratifying things that we're doing is this show has 5 original songs. Mm. And traditionally, doing music over Zoom is not something that has been able to be done, right?
Right.
Because of latency issues, because of just the way that video is compressed, and the fact that we all have different Wi-Fi speeds. But we did find a program that allowed us to feed the music together. And now it's just a matter of our voices syncing together. And we will, myself and a couple of other actors who sing in the show, have found a way to make that work. And that has been extremely gratifying and a lot of fun and a big surprise for this show, because you usually do not get to hear music from a live Zoom production.
Right. So what is that software for those that may want to try it?
It's common software that we use in the theater, which is called QLab. Mm. So if you have the song and you can feed the music through the Zoom audio interface, this is very technical conversation that I don't even fully understand. Our sound designer is the one who did it for us. But running QLab through Zoom, it bypasses all of the latency issues so that it's delivered to the actors in the same time. And then it's just a matter of syncing up the actors' voices. But if you then direct the show in a way where the actors can echo one another, then you can bypass that latency issue altogether and just set it up that way so that it all syncs up the way you want to exactly.
Oh, cool. That's I know people in our area too are still trying to figure out how to do this and what, you know, how do we find our way through here? So that's a good tip. That's a great tip. What are typical audiences for Sing Place Theater plays normally? And then what audience do you hope to reach with the Zoom world?
I'll take the first question, and maybe, Will, you can speak to the next audience.
I would love to.
Yes, love it. So our typical audiences, we try to be representative of our community, both with the audiences we serve, the playwrights that we produce, and the artists that we employ. And so there are five main groups that we really try to pay attention to. We try to do works by and about women, immigrants, people with disabilities, the LGBTQIA community, and the BIPOC community. So amongst those five, we try to find our audiences as well. That is not to say that we aren't very much in love with our straight white men. We absolutely are. But we know where to find them, right? And they populate our audiences quite nicely. So we're trying to find ways to expand our audiences in those five areas.
Yeah. And in terms of expansion, the sort of surprise silver lining of all this pandemic stuff was that, wow, all of a sudden our art is like infinitely more accessible than it was before. You know, not everyone, not even everyone in New York City can make it to the theater that we typically produce in, but most everyone can, in theory, access a Zoom production. And in that way, we still haven't figured out how to answer this question completely. We're still working on it. We still have conversations about it regularly. But the idea that, like, us as a New York theater company could represent these groups of people and really be accessible to them all over is enormous. The implications of that are huge, and we really want to figure out how to connect those dots, how to make the lightning,
have a path to traverse.
Exactly.
Well, we record this. You've already done one live run, right? And you have one coming up on February 5th.
Actually, we have it on the 3rd. We're having it on Wednesday the 3rd.
Okay, so how did it first go? And then you're streaming.
We're streaming between now and then, and we'll have that link available on our website. Yeah.
And is the stream kind of whichever one went best, or a hodgepodge of both? Or
right now it's just obviously the first one that we did, right? And then once we record the Wednesday performance, we'll see which one will be the best bang for their buck.
So how did the first live run go for you?
How was it for you, Will?
I had a great time. We typically, we're a strange theater company. We don't spend a lot of time in rehearsals running scenes or running the play. So often performances are like the first or second time. I think this one, it was the second time that we'd ran the play all the way through in the rehearsal. So like in that way, it's so exciting. It's so like, you really have to, how can I apply all this work that I was doing in rehearsals? How can I take all this stuff that I've learned about the story and that I've learned about this character and bring it into every moment of the play? It really does start to feel like play at that point. It really is about the creativity and the action in the moment. And it's so lovely that those things still happen on Zoom. They still work. I hear actors complain all the time, like, "Oh, I don't get the immediacy of it. I don't get the response from my scene partner." Yes, you do.
You're right.
They're right there. They're right there. I can hear them. I can see them. I can still interact with them. It's lovely. It's a lot of fun.
Cool. Unless the gremlins of technology come up and drop somebody's internet or something, right?
Oh, no.
Yeah, sorry. Didn't mean to put that out there. I apologize.
It happens. But we find a way. We always find a way.
Well, that's outstanding. So as we're wrapping up here, again, how can we find the theater and all about it? And how can we get to this particular production?
Our social media and our website are both the same, so it's really easy to remember. On social media, we're at The Scene Place, and that's scene with your eyeballs, Scene Place. And our website is thesceneplace.com.
Cool. And I'm going to throw it at you. Do you have the dates for your next live is February 3rd, and you're streaming through February 3rd?
We're going to stream through the 3rd as well.
All right. So again, I'll have some links to this on the show notes page for this particular episode at www.inexplicabledumbshow.com. Thank you, Aaron. Thank you, William, for chatting with me today and break legs in Zoom land.
Thank you so much.
Thanks, John.
Would you like to be a pal of the Inexplicable Dumb Show? Why don't you head on over to www.inexplicabledumbshow.com and look for the Hosting Donations Accepted button. Press that and make a donation and help the Dumb Show cover its web hosting fees. Your donation is greatly appreciated. Thank you for your support.
All right, so that is it. I'd like to thank Aaron Kronikin and William Ketter for joining me today via Zoom to talk about the Seeing Place Theater's production of Dog Act. Ticket information and stuff and information about the theater and their charities and all that sort of stuff will be found on the show notes page for this particular episode at www.inexplicabledumbshow.com. Hey, do you want to be part of the Dumb Show? Please do so by calling the voicemail line at 615-866-1282. Or put your thoughts in an email, podcast@inexplicabledumbshow.com. Or follow the show on Twitter, @inexplicableds, @I, inexplicable capital D, capital S. Find out the latest comings and goings and whatnot for the show via our Twitter feed. Next week, who knows what we'll be up to, but it'll be something good. But on the horizon, we've got our Valentine's Day special coming up, so love is in the air. Woo-hoo. So until next week, this is John Malden saying, hey, I'll see ya. Bye.
Are you a music lover? Then let Magnatune dazzle you with how different we are from the rest of the music industry. Interesting independent artists in diverse genres. Perfect quality WAV files in addition to MP3s and many other formats. Instant album downloads or traditional CDs by mail with free shipping. All this and half of every sale goes directly to the artist. So visit us now at magnatune.com. That's M-A-G-N-A-T-U-N-E. Magnatune. We are not evil.
COVID-19, better known as coronavirus, has spread throughout the world. There are a few ways to help lower the spread of this respiratory disease. Wash your hands. Avoid touching your face, including mouth, nose, and eyes. Cover your coughs and sneezes. Monitor your symptoms and consult with your doctor. Stay at home and away from other sick people except for medical care. Clean and disinfect high-touch surfaces. For more information, please visit cdc.gov/COVID-19. Thank you.
Blueberry. This podcast is a member of the Blueberry Network. Blueberry. No E's. That's Blueberry, BLUBRRY.com. Blueberry.com.
Pop Alternative Media.